Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, an update on the shooting in Alexandria. The shooter has been identified as 66-year-old James Hodgkinson. He's from Bellevue, Illinois. He has died. Five people were injured, including the Majority Whip, Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana, two Capitol Police officers, a congressional staffer, and a lobbyist. We will have an update on that story on Here and Now following our broadcast this afternoon. Now we're going to move to the garden. And for all of the gardeners among us, we know that this is an important time of year, especially for folks who've planted vegetable gardens. And we're right in the middle of the summer growing season. The markets are full of beets and carrots and lettuce and peas and asparagus and strawberries. So what's next on your list to plant in the next few weeks? And how will our warm winter and wet spring inform our decisions? My guests for the remainder of the hour are Carrie Engel, the greenhouse manager and plant specialist at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville. She's responsible for their large inventory of annuals, tropicals, and vegetables. And Crystal Foreman. She's a master gardener and the interim director of the Farm Alliance of Baltimore, a network of local urban farmers. Ms. Foreman is also the owner of Holistic Healthy Living for All and the director of Holistic Wellness and Health, a company that promotes the integration of healthy eating, physical fitness, and wellness. Welcome to you both. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for being here. We invite your comments, questions here on Midday as we go to the garden. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. And if you want to follow us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall, if you check out the WIPR Facebook page, which is WIPR 881 Baltimore, you will see that we are live streaming this portion of our program. We've got a beautiful set in the background set up by our director, producer, writer, gaffer, head electrician, and vice president in charge of everything video, Jamila Krimpel. So we appreciate Jamila being here, and we invite you to join us on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Crystal Foreman, tell me what the Farm Alliance of Baltimore is.
So the Farm Alliance of Baltimore is a collection of 13 urban farms, all in Baltimore City, located from as far south as Brooklyn and as far north as Northeast. We have the Greater Gardens in Northeast Baltimore City and Cherry Hill Urban Garden to the south. The mission is to increase the visibility of urban farming and improve access to urban-grown foods. So we're united by practices and principles that are socially, economically, and environmentally just.
So these are in oftentimes in neighborhoods that have what we call food deserts, where it's difficult to get to a grocery store and to have access to fresh produce in particular. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of our farmers also have farm stands to help support those neighborhoods.
And those farm stands are located at these farms that are in places like Cherry Hill and, you know, around town?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. And there's how many of them in the Alliance?
13.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's the sum total of all of the urban farms, or what we would call urban? I mean, it's an urban farm if it's in the city limits of Baltimore, right? Right. But, I mean, there's probably even more than that, I would imagine.
There are more growing every year. I just learned of a couple of new ones. There are about 30 urban farms in Baltimore City right now.
Yeah, terrific. That's great. So lots of opportunities for people to get out there and not only purchase the produce at the farm stands, but also learn how to do it, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I guess a lot of these are involving kids and stuff. I know there's one near in my neighborhood in Reservoir Hill, the Whitelock Community Farm,
yes. And
they're always giving classes and they're showing kids how to do stuff and figure things out.
They have a lot of educational components. They teach people how to can food. They do have a farm stand right there on Whitelock,
mm-hmm. And
they do a lot of education and outreach. A lot of volunteers come from the community, so it's very hands-on, and people get to learn from the seed to harvesting.
Yeah. And Carrie Engel, where does Valley View get most of its plants and stuff? I mean, are they locally sourced, as we say?
Well, the vegetable plants we grow ourselves. So we have 126 acres over in Hydes, Maryland. So we grow about 70-some varieties of tomato plants, boatload of peppers, and all that kind of thing. Most of the other plants that we do get, the annuals we grow a lot of, but are from local growers. So people that have been in business for years, like Babico Greenhouse, Hillcrest, we get all of our herbs, are all pretty much local. We have a few that we deal with in southern Pennsylvania for our greenhouses and our perennials, but it's really nice. It's nice local stuff.
Yeah, and some of those farms are represented, like at the Baltimore Farmers Market. I've seen them a lot, and it's really amazing the burgeoning of the farm movement in just these last 5 or 10 years. I mean, you've been in this business for quite a while,
right.
40 plus years or something. So, but it's really, I mean, because all through Baltimore County, Harford County, Carroll County, I mean, it's not just Baltimore City where you can find farms and farm stands. I mean, it's just so readily accessible now.
Well, it is. And when I started at Valley View, that's what we were. We were a farm stand, and we grew all of we grew corn, tomatoes, cantaloupe, watermelon over at the family farm in Hides, brought them over for resale. And just as I guess supermarkets got a little bit better at it, we kind of backed off of that and went to the plants. And now it's interesting to see everything come full circle and to be so available for everybody. Just a nice, healthy alternatives everywhere.
Yeah, because when anybody goes to a garden store, I mean, even a Home Depot or a Lowe's or something, they're expecting vegetables.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not like you have to go to some special place to get vegetables anymore. This time of year, Crystal Foreman, what should people be planting? What are people planting in the urban farms that are part of the Farm Alliance?
So right now they're planting watermelon, pumpkin, squash, onions are being planted right now, lettuce, and a lot of cruciferous vegetables. So we have our broccoli and kale, collard, spinach, all of those are being grown and planted.
So for yellow or green squash, you know, zucchinis and squash and stuff, if you put them in the ground now, you know, this week, when can you expect to have them? How long does a plant like that take to...
That is about 2 to 3 months.
Yeah. So you got to wait a little bit. You got to be patient in this business, don't you?
And I
wonder, Carrie Engel, is there, in terms of the plants, not just veggies, but is there like an it plant this year? Is there a plant that everybody's going after?
That's hard to say. There really isn't, but more and more people are looking for pollinator plants because they want to include those plants closer to their vegetables so they get bees and get other pollinators in there. So things like pentas and milkweed, all the Asclepias family plants are definitely sought after a lot this year and more than ever. It's nice to see that too.
And the paucity of bees is a real problem, isn't it? I mean,
bees are
having a rough time.
They are, and I think a lot of people then are more aware of pesticides and everything that goes into providing themselves food and flowers. So they're just a little bit more careful with all that, and I think just aware of how all this works together to create just lives for ourselves and for our community.
Yeah, that's great. And with the Farm Alliance, Crystal Foreman, I mean, are people, you know, meeting regularly? It's obviously a network, it's an alliance, but like when you get together, are you coordinating your efforts? I mean, or are individual farms doing things kind of on their own? I mean, is there some sort of overarching, network coordination between the different farms?
So both. A lot of the farms are doing their own programming. A lot of them are nonprofits, not all of them. And then we also share a stand at the 32nd Street Market, Waverly Market. So we're there every Saturday, and we have produce from all of our farms. So that's one
great
thing.
One-stop shopping. Yeah.
Exactly, one-stop shopping.
Yeah.
We have a great variety. We have products that you might not find at other farms and more specialty crops as well.
Yeah. And now it's no surprise that the phones are ringing off the hook, and
great.
I promise you folks that we'll get to you in just a second. But there is one question I want to ask you, Carrie Engel, and that is, given the funky kind of winter we had, which was pretty warm, all things considered, I think we had like 2 instances of snow or something, if I can remember, and the fact that the spring has been so wet, I mean, what does that do to the calendar? What does that do to, you know, our decisions about what to plant now or what we can expect to harvest and when we can expect to harvest? It's been a weird bunch of weather the last
several
months.
It has, and that Mother's Day is kind of the magic date for a lot of our frost-free crops to go in, and we had frost. We had some cold weather just as we got into that. So I think everybody backed out. So we're finding a lot of people are starting plants a lot later. So they're still looking for tomatoes and peppers and squash and bean seed and all that to get
going.
And
it's not too late.
It's not too late at all. No.
Yeah.
I mean, the most any of those plants are going to take about like 90 days. So you've got plenty of time before we're back into the frost zone.
Yeah. So if you put in peppers now or something, you'll get
you're
them in
get
August
them.
Or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
You should be fine.
Early, late August. All right. Well, let's go to the phones. David in Hamden, welcome to Midday as we go to the garden. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. I was curious, what steps can I take to ensure that seeds I plant are not GMO seeds? So I want to make sure that these seeds are they've not been genetically modified.
Well, that's a question that's on a lot of folks' mind, this genetically modified stuff now. It's a big concern to a lot of folks. Crystal Foreman, what do you think?
So there are a lot of organizations you can buy seeds from that say heirloom or specifically say non-GMO. Several things you can do. You can do seed saving. You can contact organizations that do seed saving, and you know for sure that that's organic. So if you buy from a farmer that's organic and you save the seeds, that's one method. Another method would be to be part of a seed saving exchange. So in Baltimore, Charm City Farms does, has a group that does that as well.
So if you just go to a catalog, Carrie Angle, can you be sure 100% that you're getting a non-GMO seed? I mean,
Most of the GMO seed that I think we're worried about is more big ag. So I think you have to look out for corn maybe and wheat and canola and that sort of thing. Once you get into your tomatoes and peppers and some of your day-to-day varieties, it's not worth it. So most of those are non-GMO. And if you go to places like Renee's Garden Seed or Burpee Garden Seed, or I'm trying to think of another one, Botanical Interest, they'll list right on their website or in their catalog that they're non-GMO.
I got a cucumber plant that I planted that wasn't GMO, but I'll tell you, it looks like it was GMO. It is one weird-looking plant. I don't know how those cucumbers are going to taste, but
right.
Boy, oh boy, it's going to be interesting to see that. Well, thank you for that call, David. I appreciate it. Let's go to Eleanor in Mount Washington. Welcome to Midday with Crystal Foreman and Carrie Angle.
Hi. I have a deck on which I have many, many flower pots, and I plant annuals. And every year by about mid-July, they start looking leggy and weedy and just kind of burnt out. And I was wondering what I can do to prevent that.
Thanks for your call, Eleanor, and I feel your pain. I have the same kind of deck and the same kind of pots, and you're right. Sometimes they just get a little straggly looking, even in midsummer. Carrie Angle, what's your advice?
Water. Water's number one. I mean, container plants just need to be watered, and sometimes every day, sometimes more than that. Because you're watering so often, you have to replace the nutrients in there, so you do have to go with a fertilizer of some kind. There are plenty of organic options out there. There's also organic options for the soil retaining moisture. So they're using a lot of things like aloe and coconut core in potting mixes now. There's also some products that carry soil moist. So a lot of different things.
So they actually mix like aloe in the soil?
Yes.
We have an aloe plant here on display,
right.
Courtesy of our director and producer, Jamila Krempel. You can see that if you're following us on Facebook. That's interesting. So, Crystal Foreman, I didn't realize there's such thing as organic fertilizer.
Yes.
I'm so dumb. I thought that organic meant that there was just never any fertilizer of any kind. Is that not right?
No, so there's organic fertilizer. Some people use compost as part of their fertilizing and mushroom compost as well. As long as it hasn't been infused with chemicals, harsh chemicals, it's considered organic. So manure as well as green manure.
Because in the city gardens, there is sometimes a challenge about the soil because there's some funky stuff in the soil in Baltimore City. I mean, I interviewed some folks from Hopkins a couple years ago about, some chemicals that they were finding in the soil. Do you find that any of your folks in the Farm Alliance are contending with that?
No, all of our farmers are required to do soil testing before growing, and that's a requirement for food crops in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm. So you know it's clear before you
even plant. It's planted, definitely. 410-662-8780,
that's our number here on Midday. We're talking gardening today. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Ainsley in Timonium, thanks for your call. What's on your mind?
Actually, I have two questions. So first of all, I have a garden plot up at Oregon Ridge Center, which is fabulous. It's the first time my family and I have done it. And last night we were talking to the ladies next to us, and they said they've had a major problem with ants and certain types of ladybugs. And so the marigolds that they had planted weren't helping keep them away. So I wanted to find out if there are any natural ways to keep predators like those away.
Okay, Carrie Angle. I mean, that's a problem whether you're in the city, the county,
it
doesn't
is.
Matter where.
Well, I just have to say, unfortunately, marigolds, a lot of the smell has been bred out of the cute little 6 to 9 inch ones. If you can plant some of the taller marigolds, they still have some of that in there. A lot of herbs do help keep things out. Things like mint, although you have to be careful of mint taking over your garden. Things like lavender, pennyroyal, all work to keep a lot of insects out. So you can certainly use that. The best thing, though, I think, is just to keep things rotated and also to sort of mix plants, have companion planting. Rodale does a great job, Rodale Publishing, of talking about companion plants and what plants will help others grow
companion
a little bit
plants. So there really is a science knowing that, if you plant A and you plant B next to it every time, that's going to be a good deal.
Absolutely. And it really is a very important part of, I think, sustainable gardening as you move forward.
Yeah, interesting. Compatible plants. So do you do that? Can you do that in a vegetable garden?
I mean, definitely. So we do plant things like garlic and mint to help keep different pests away. We also use chrysanthemums and neem. So neem can be used as well organically.
Neem oil. Yeah, interesting.
And this is sprayed on the plants. For the ant problem, diatomaceous earth works really well. It's a natural substance. You can just sprinkle it in the garden and they'll be gone within 2 days.
Wow. So there is stuff that works. I mean,
yeah.
You don't need a
don't need
you don't do the National Guard and chemicals, right?
Exactly.
Ellen in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to share something. Last spring, a year ago, I bought some organic butter crunch lettuce plants at Whole Foods, and I bought some at Mom's this year. But anyway, the ones I planted last year, when I cut them back, they just grew again. So I had basically lettuce all summer from those plants. And at the end, when one of them completely bolted, at the top of it, it had these little black dots. So I shook them out into a cup and just left them in the kitchen. And this year, I just stuck them into the ground and, into a pot. And I've got a whole other bunch of this beautiful lettuce coming up. And anyway, so it's, you know, anyway, word to the, and it's all organic, and I saved it, and, you know, the seeds, and there you go.
Good for you, Ellen. Well, it sounds like, you know, I mean, Carrie Engel, when it comes to gardening, as the song goes, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug, you know? sometimes things work out, and sometimes they don't. It sounds like Ellen's got a very green thumb.
She does. And lettuce is one of the easier things, I think, to grow. You can start them pretty early, and you can look for slow bolting varieties. That's when the plant goes to seed to do. And as long as you leave the heart of the lettuce, especially the leaf lettuces and some of the buttercrunch types, you're going to continue to get leaves. So you can get
several just cut around it. Yeah.
Just cut around it. Leave that little heart in there. There's a black-seeded Simpson, oh, actually, Simpson Elite Lettuce is a great little leaf lettuce and some red and oak leaf varieties that are wonderful.
Simpson Elite Lettuce.
Simpson Elite, yes.
I think it would be pretty cool if I could say to my wife, well, dear, I'm serving you elite lettuce tonight. All right, we're going to have more on gardening with Carrie Engel. She's a master gardener and the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms up in Cockeysville. Crystal Foreman is here as well. She is also a certified master gardener and a wellness entrepreneur and the interim director of the Farm Alliance of Baltimore. That's a coalition that promotes urban-grown foods. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, more on this very, very popular subject at 410-662-8780 is the place to call. Midday at WIPR.org is the email. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, which we certainly hope you will want to do, at Midday, Tom Hall. Stay with us. At Midday is indeed continuing. Thank you, Nathan. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking about the history of Juneteenth, the annual celebration that marks the day, which was June 19th, 1865, when the enslaved residents of Texas were first told, this, of course, is like 5 months after the end of the Civil War, that they were now free. There's a Juneteenth celebration in Reservoir Hill on Saturday. We're going to talk to the organizers of that event, B. Cole and Aisha Pugh from the Dovecote Cafe, as well as Dr. Terry Ann Scott. She's an assistant professor of history at Hood College. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick is going to stop by, as she does every Thursday, with a review of Fred's Diner. That's the new play at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're talking summer gardening with two women who know a lot about how to do it. Carrie Engel of Valley View Farms in Cockeysville and Crystal Foreman with the Farm Alliance of Baltimore, a coalition of local producers who promote food that is urban grown. There are 13 members of the alliance scattered all through the city of Baltimore. If you'd like to join our conversation, and we hope you will, 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org and our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. And I'm told that we have a question on Facebook Live, and we are glad that you guys are tuning in. Some of you are tuning in on Facebook. This comes from Rachel, who says, my 3-year-old asparagus bed has been decimated by asparagus beetles this year. If at this point I completely clear out the ferns, will I get new spears and hopefully reduce the number of pests, or should I try to salvage what is there? Crystal, Carrie,
you want to kind of leave those ferns up because that's going to help feed the roots. And because asparagus is a perennial, you want to keep that going. So you want to take the ferns out right around Christmas time. Just cut them down, put them in, I hate to say it, don't compost them. Get them out of there because they usually are riddled with pests. To take care of the asparagus beetle, there are some organic methods. There are also some things like 7 that'll work. But take a look at some of those. The neem oil that Crystal talked about earlier is a great way to go in a lot of cases because it just suffocates the insects on the plant. And she mentioned mentioned chrysanthemums earlier. There's a pesticide made from that called pyrethrins. It's a natural, and that'll generally work on the asparagus beetle as well.
Okay, so the asparagus beetle is specific to the asparagus.
It is specific to the asparagus.
The name, yeah.
You got
right,
it.
Right. But and that's interesting. So those ferns are not a good thing to compost because they're usually riddled with the beetles.
Yeah, they really are.
So not everything is the thing you want to throw in the compost.
Right. I made the mistake of putting some English ivy in my compost pile. Big mistake.
Not a good idea.
Big mistake.
Well, this is, you know, we live and we learn
in
the
right.
garden, don't we?
Yeah.
And Crystal Forman, when it comes to compost, that really is the magic elixir for a lot of gardens. And many of these urban farms, I know Whitelock has a big compost pile, and there are services where you could, like, there's one service, and I can't remember the name of it. Forgive me. We'll try to find
compost
it.
Compost cab?
It could be where you, like, leave your compost out, and
yes.
they pick it up.
Yes.
And then they bring it, and there's this gigantic, you know, mountain of compost somewhere.
Yes.
And then you can go and get some a couple times a year when you need it. So that's great.
And Real Food Farm has also started doing the same, similar type of thing. You can register for the class once a month. You have to, like, take a class first before you can be part of it. But they have a huge organic compost bin going on right now.
Because, you know, I mean, you just, if you're scraping carrots or beets or, you know, clipping the tops off your strawberries and you just throw them in there,
right.
I mean, it's amazing how that stuff, I mean, it's just, I've been doing this now for a few years. I got
right.
a couple of different plastic tumblers, you know, that you
mm-hmm.
can spin around. It's like you want to reach in there and pull out a lottery, you know, the lottery winner. But, you know, it's really great because, you know, it's certainly for me, I only have just this little plot in the front of my house and a bunch of pots in the back on this deck. But it's enough, you know, to fertilize all of those, all of that area. And boy, it makes a difference. And Carrie, you also make the point that it's really important to make sure that you aerate the soil.
Right. And organic matter helps with that. So maybe you don't have compost available to you. You can buy it bags. You can buy compost at Cow Manure. Maryland Environmental Services puts out a product called Leaf Grow that I use for everything that I don't use my own compost for. So there are other options out there, too.
I always felt kind of dumb in the years before I was composting because I live in the city and there are very few options in terms of garden stores and stuff in downtown Baltimore. So I would drive out to your place
Thank
or
you.
To Lowe's or Home Depot or someplace and
right.
I would buy manure and put it in my car and drive it back to the city. I'm thinking, what is wrong with this picture? I mean, there must be a better way. So, you know,
no,
like
so right.
going out purchasing this stuff and bringing it back is like, there must be a different way. So I did find a different way. Stephen and Frederick, welcome to the show. You've got a question that I bet a lot of folks are interested in. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have two questions. First question is, every summer I have these beautiful tomatoes, and just about when they're ripe, as ground squirrels come up, and take a bite out, and I'd like to know strategies to thwart the squirrels. And if I do, the second question is, if I lose the battle, and they always just take one bite out of my tomato, and I just cut around that bite and eat the tomatoes. My question is, do ground squirrels carry diseases that makes that not a good idea?
Well, Crystal Forman, the only thing that I do about squirrels is I play AC/DC 24 hours a day. It tends to get rid of them. You know, they flee. Of course, so do all of my neighbors. But, I mean, we must have
yeah.
problems with, you know, squirrels and rats, too,
yes.
you know, which are squirrels without tails or fluffy tails in the city. I mean, what are some of the strategies?
So if you're lucky and you have a cat that goes out, the scent of the cat definitely deters a lot of rodents. And some of the urban farms actually have cats that just, like, roam and help with that. But you can spray hot pepper, do a solution of hot pepper spray, or actually put cayenne or hot pepper down, and it will deter them. It's unpleasant, but it won't kill them or hurt them.
But when you harvest the tomatoes, the tomatoes aren't, like, covered in hot pepper. I mean, do the tomatoes taste like hot pepper?
It's more on the ground.
Uh-huh.
So you want to put it on the ground. You can spray garlic as well. Most rodents don't like the smell of mint. As Carrie mentioned earlier, mint will overtake an area, so it's better to grow it in a container near the plants, unless you don't mind it taking over. So I actually do have a large patch of mint growing, and I'll just let it grow wild out front.
It's kind of hard, Carrie Engel, to have something other than a large patch of mint.
That's
almost
true.
Redundant, isn't it? Because,
that's
I mean, I have mint for the last 5 years that I've never planted. It just shows up. The birds just, you know, make it happen. I mean, and it comes back every year and stuff. I can't get my rosemary to come back. Why is that? I mean, I have friends where their rosemary comes back. Mine's in a pot. on a deck.
Yep, that's why. Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's a plant. It's a tender perennial around here anyway. But in a pot, no matter what you have, it can be the hardiest of plants. If the pot freezes, you're shot.
Yeah.
And they can come inside, but I have a lot of problem with powdery mildew with rosemary once I bring it in. So I just buy new plants every year.
Yeah, just throw
them
in.
Or start ones. You can start cuttings from them pretty easily,
so when
too.
It comes to, you know, the critters, like out in the county and stuff, you know, the deer, I guess, are a big problem for a lot of folks. Deer, squirrels, that kind of thing. What do you tell folks?
There are a couple of different things you can do. You can put up a fence. I have a fence and a dog, which has helped immensely.
Yeah.
You can use just black netting that's specifically for birds when your berries are coming ready or whatever that can go over the plants. And there are some other solutions. There's a product called Animal Stopper or Squirrel Stopper or Deer Stopper, and most of them have an herb presence in them. So those herbs are the same ones we've been talking about, tend to keep them away, whether it's garlic or rosemary or clove oil, cinnamon sometimes, and for baby rabbits.
Garlic is pretty wild. My brother is a really good farmer. He's down in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and he grows like 7 or 8 different strains of garlic. Crystal Forman, I never knew there was more than one. I thought garlic was garlic. But gosh, I mean, it's amazing the different kinds you can get. I haven't really done a study of it. Do they taste significantly different?
So like elephant garlic is not as flavorful. It's not as intense of a flavor as some of the smaller garlic heads. I haven't done too much taste testing. I've had different, maybe 4 different varieties, but there are a lot of different varieties of garlic out there.
Yeah, that's pretty well. And Carrie, it's interesting, you know, a recurring theme this afternoon is herbs and how good they are for things other than just eating.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's good to be able to, I just love the fact that I can walk out of my kitchen onto my deck and cut some fresh basil, cut some fresh rosemary, cut some mint, cut some oregano, chives. I'm growing all that stuff in these little teeny pots. And, you know, it makes dinner taste good. But it's also really good for the rest of the stuff that's out there, isn't it?
Yeah, and so many herbs have dual purposes. So like lavender, I'll put on myself when I'm going out in the garden because it does act as an insect repellent. But it's also the herb of relaxation. So you put a little sachet of lavender under your pillow at night, and it just soothes you a little bit. So many different herbs just have that magical quality. And things like basil you talked about, I mean, we probably have 12, 14 different varieties, and they all have a slightly different taste and growing habit. And it's amazing how much it can affect what you're cooking in your fresh salads.
I got to try that sachet thing because all that AC/DC that I'm listening to, it gets me all hyped up. It's terrible. Let's go to Spencer in Hamden. Spencer, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hello. So you guys have been talking about forms of organic fertilizers, and I just wanted to briefly mention that I'm involved with a local company that makes, it's worm castings. I'm sure you guys know about that. And it's actually sold at Valley View. It's called Full Circle, and we have our own soils and then a tonic that we make as well. And then I had a question about, this is the first year that I have planted my own garden, and I got a little bit excited when it got warm around Easter and put a bunch of seeds in the ground. Should I be expecting any of those to come up? Because I did not see anything or haven't seen anything, and I think it was a little early.
All right, well, we'll pose that question to Crystal Forman. But first, worm casting. I've never heard of that. I know typecasting. I'm always, you know, cast as the idiot, for example. I get used to that. But, I mean, what is worm casting?
So worm castings are basically the manure of worms. Basically, people feed scraps. This is a form of composting. So people will feed scraps to the worms, and the worms produce beneficial excrement that is used to help fertilize.
It must take a lot of worms.
It does.
I mean, worm excrement, you know, I mean, it ain't very much.
Red Wranglers are the worms that are used the most for that, and they multiply like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And people will just have like a 2x4 or 2-foot by 4-foot type of bin, and it'll handle a lot of produce. You can continue. People do it in their kitchen, under the sink, and in their basement. And it's pretty
So you
compact.
Can actually sort of compost inside.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. And do you get a lot of, you sell a lot of that stuff at Valley View?
Well, it was new for us, I guess, last year, but we had a lot of people asking for it. And some people do want to know how to do it. And I know the Extension has different plans. And up at the Ag Center in Baltimore County, they have some classes on it. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, worm compost is fantastic to use. But it's amazing how many organic things are out there now to use. We talked a lot about mycorrhizal fungus. fungi, I think, is in a lot of fertilizer, but it's a beneficial fungus that attaches itself to the roots, and it helps the plant take a little bit faster and then handle drought and everything as we go through summer a little bit better. So all that's available to us now, and just these communities all work together of fungus and insects in the soil and make good things happen.
Yeah, cool. Now, what about Spencer's query about, you know, planting stuff too early? What's your advice?
I do it
advice?
Over. Yeah, just do it over. The seeds haven't come
just
up yet.
Start over. Yeah,
it's
right.
Just easier. Because
that's the thing about gardening. Sometimes you just got to throw the towel in and say, I have failed miserably, and I shall try again, right? I mean, you really can't. I mean, it's a great thing because it's in a way, it's a miracle in my deck that anything grows. On the other hand, I've been growing stuff for years.
Well, I just know so many people, you're just ready to go. So you start seeds in January, February that can't go out until May, and they get a little too tall, you know.
I know that late April, early May period is really tempting because, you know, you get that one day that's, you know, 75 degrees, and you think, oh, I can put stuff out there. And then you put the plants out there, and it's 34 degrees the next day.
Oh, and I roll the dice. I put some stuff out early now and then. What the heck?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, what are you, in your experience with the Farm Alliance and, you know, the stuff that you're growing personally, what do you think that, are there one or two mistakes that gardeners, sometimes even experienced gardeners, make consistently?
Consistently. Sometimes overwatering. Mm-hmm. They think something needs more water than it needs. And other one would be underwatering. So those are the two things. Water is definitely a hot issue. Yeah.
I mean, is there a general rule of thumb, Carrie, about, you know, when you look at something, you say this needs it or this doesn't need it, or this only needs a little instead of a lot?
Well, again, if you add a lot of organic matter to your soil, whether it's compost or anything, it holds water better. So that's key. The other thing is you want to water deeply. So you want to water less frequently, but water more. So because you want to teach the roots to go down looking for the water. And if you go out every day and sprinkle the surface a little bit, those roots are going to stay at the surface. So to get them to go deep, just water once or twice a week to get them going down. My boss and I had an old Billy Ford. We used to have this little bet thing going. He wouldn't water his plants ever after he initially put them in because he had so much.
He would just let rain take care of it?
Yeah, pretty much. But, I mean, he had really prepared his soil time after time. And then one year we had a drought and he calls me like August 15th and said, I had water.
Yeah. Wow. But just because the soil had been prepared in such a way that it was so moist and nutrient rich.
Right.
It didn't need water.
And it was just years and years and years of working with that, rotating crops, not walking on the soil when it's wet, that really got that garden in perfect shape.
Not walking on the soil when it's wet.
Right.
It
gets rid of those air and water spaces.
Ah, interesting. And, you know, we talk about rotating crops, crystal forming, but also sometimes you got to rotate dirt too, right? I mean, the dirt, you can't just use the same dirt, the same soil year after year after year after year after year, can you? I mean, for little gardens, you know, I'm not talking about big farms and vegetables. I mean,
for little gardens?
Yeah.
You have to add some nutrients to it because a lot of the nutrients keep getting absorbed or taken in by the plant. So it's more, you don't have to remove it, but just kind of aerate it and add nutrients and compost to the soil that's already there.
Yeah, so especially early in the process, shovels are your friend, right? Get in there, just turn it over, chop it up a little bit, you know, because I know in the city a lot of folks deal with, once they get down, you know, not too deep, it becomes like red clay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough. And so you really got to mix that stuff up and make sure it happens. We have an email here from Rob who says, where can one buy wild mushrooms in the area? There are so many varieties in Western Europe, but not here. And that's a real shame. I see mushrooms at the farmer's market under the expressway, Crystal. I mean, is anybody growing mushrooms in the city?
So I know Charm City Farms is doing mushroom garden or mushrooms, and they're teaching people how to grow their own mushrooms as well. There's someone at Waverly who sells mushrooms, but I'm not sure if it's wild mushrooms. So that's something to look into. Really, the best way is to go out foraging and looking for it if you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. You and you do a lot of that, don't you?
I mean,
foraging is a thing. Cool. So where do you forage in this area, for example?
Wyman Park is one of my favorite places. Actually, this morning I had some mulberries. I was taking a walk and I saw some. They were ripe and I just ate some. So that's my favorite
place.
But
you got to be pretty. I mean, you're smart enough to know that it's a mulberry and it's not toxic, and, you know, I mean, I would be so nervous about encountering a berry and saying, you know, can I eat that or not? Because I wouldn't know.
Definitely know what you're picking, because there are some beautiful trees out there that have very poisonous plants.
Yeah.
So just becoming knowledgeable, going on plant walks. A lot of people have free plant walks as well as low cost plant walks. And just exploring areas like Druid Hill and Herring Run as well, And just walking up and down the street, there are some streets where you'll see walnut trees and all types of berry trees.
Yeah, it's in Wyman Park, foraging right here in, yes. in the heart of downtown. That's terrific. 410-662-8780. That's our number here on Midday. We do have a few minutes left to take your calls. Midday at WIPR.org is our email. Clarence, you're in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I'd like to ask the young lady from Valley View Farms. I planted sweet potato plants, two, and 2 days ago, something ate the leaves off, and what I did, I cut it back, and I was out there a little while ago, and it's still living. I put a container around it, and should I just go buy new plants, or will they survive?
What do you think, Carrie?
Okay, so be patient. They will survive. I probably would get a couple plants just in case, too. Groundhogs are notorious for sweet potatoes,
especially.
They like
sweet potatoes.
Oh, yeah, they love them. So I've had some problem with them myself.
Yeah, groundhogs and me. Sweet potatoes are delicious.
They
Boy,
really are
they're
good.
Really
yeah.
great. And so what are we going to be seeing, Carrie Engel, in the farmers markets, you know, in the next 4 weeks? I mean, asparagus is probably getting towards the end, right?
Yep.
Strawberries, they never last very long. Blueberries will be coming in pretty soon, right? They usually June something,
sure,
right?
Sure, and I think by now you're getting squash and most of your cucurbits and most vegetables. The early tomatoes will be coming in, the earlier peppers, a lot of the hot peppers. People are really going after those lately,
mm-hmm.
And they love those plants. So I think they're kind of some of the things you'll see. And I just think it's good eating this time of year. I love raw vegetables. Went to my friend's garden the other day and just picked a whole bag of peas and ate them on my ride home.
Yeah.
Just loved
nice,
them.
Nice, right. Just pop them in there. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, bet you can't eat just one, as they say. Yeah, that's terrific. And Crystal Foreman, I mean, the farms, if folks are interested in, you know, helping out some of the farms or getting involved and, you know, being part of the collectives that are running some of these farms, what's the best way to do that?
They can reach me at info@farmalliance.org, and I can get them in contact with the farm that's closest to them or the one that they want to work with.
Yeah, so people can go and they can volunteer or they can, you know, be part of the thing and take the
yes.
classes and stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's important because, I mean, I think people really do now know more about it than they used to. I mean, your business must be very different now, Carrie Engel, than it was 15 years ago where, I mean, a lot of people would come to you probably then knowing nothing.
I sat in a trailer for 40 hours with my boss telling me how to plant a tomato plant. And now people come in and they know, but they want to know how to tweak it a little bit. They want new varieties. Well, actually, they want old varieties. They want the old heirlooms and that kind of thing available.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
what's been fun.
Well, it's been great to see you both. Thank you so much. And good luck in the garden.
Thank you, Tom.
Crystal Foreman is a certified master gardener and the interim director of the Farm Alliance of Baltimore. That's a coalition of local producers who support urban farming projects and promote the value of urban-grown foods, especially in some of our food desert neighborhoods here in Baltimore. And Carrie Engel is also a master gardener. She manages the greenhouse at Valley View Farms up in Cockeysville. She oversees its huge stock of farm-grown animals, tropicals, and vegetables. So that's it for us today. Thanks to Dangerously Delicious Pies for providing lunch today. They've got locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. On tomorrow's show, a look ahead to next Monday's observance of Juneteenth, a day of reflection on the legacy of slavery and the meaning of freedom. I'll talk with history professor Terry Ann Scott of Hood College, as well as B. Cole and Aisha Pugh. They own the Dovecote Cafe in Reservoir Hill, and they're organizing a Juneteenth home and garden tour this weekend. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick makes her weekly visit to Midday with a review of Fred's Diner at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. We hope you'll join us tomorrow on Midday. Stay tuned for Here and Now. Coming up right after the news from NPR, they'll have an update on the shooting in Alexandria, Virginia. That comes up right after the NPR news. For all of us on the Midday team, thanks for being with us. Have a great day.